Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 257 of Ally Strategies. My name is Tristan. Joining me, as always, is my friend Benjamin.
Hello, hello.
And Sam.
Hello.
Hello. This week, we are going to discuss the cards that are rotating away from Standard and into the many older formats with names that people mix up now from time to time, including, during the planning section for this show, Pioneer and Historic, in addition to Modern and Legacy and everything. What, have you guys encountered this problem with more than just a couple times, by the way, mixing up the words Pioneer and Historic? Because I've actually done this a great deal.
It happens to me constantly.
I don't mix up the words, but I do not know the legal cards in Modern anymore.
Okay.
Like, I thought I did, but now there's been too many bannings and non-bannings, and, like, cards are inconsistently banned in different formats, so I don't really know what's legal in Modern anymore. Like, I watched Sam play a game recently, and he just cast Veil of Summer, and I was like, wait, Veil of Summer is legal? And then he drew Renin 6, and I was just like, wait, Renin 6 is legal? Just, you know, I just have no idea what's legal in that format.
Yeah, I only get mixed up between Historic and Pioneer. Those are the two, because they're like kind of similar conceptually to me, and they came out at around the same time. So those are the ones that I get. That's the one that I get mixed up on.
Yeah, I experienced both of those things. Like ban list. Like I know when a card's banned in all the formats, but the cards that are banned in some of them, I don't know. It's hard to keep yourself anchored, I guess, especially because there are cards that are not legal in Standard, legal in Historic or Pioneer, not legal in Modern, and then like legal again as you get older again. So it can be really challenging to have like a heuristic that works for, like, it's not like for every card you just need to know the point at which it gets banned, right? Because some of them kind of go in and out of the ban level. Stuff like Treasure Cruise, right? Treasure Cruise oscillates in legality.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that experience during this weekend's Mythic Qualifier or whatever it's called, when somebody put a Leyline of Abundance. Is that the green one?
Yeah, that's green.
That is certainly a green one.
Is it the green one that's legal in Historic?
There's no way to know. I was just talking about how I had no idea on these things.
Is Leyline of Vitality legal in Historic? I have no
idea. That is the name of the one, yes. They put Leyline of Abundance into play against me, and I was like, I could have sworn that one was banned. Because it is banned in Pioneer.
Yes.
But it's not banned in Historic.
Hopefully this all kind of resolves a little bit. I don't know. It feels like there's maybe a little too many formats currently in the air. If you think of it as like a juggling situation, there's maybe one more than Equilibrium currently in there. I don't know. All the formats have their place, I'm sure, but...
Well, the problem for me is there's too many formats with what I would consider ban debt, which makes it harder to keep track of what's legal.
Could you define ban debt?
I think they need to make bannings before the format will be fun to play again.
Okay.
So, like, I think Standard has Uro, and before that had all the cards that they banned, when they banned Teferi, Growth Spiral, all that stuff. Modern has Uro. Pioneer has Uro. It's mostly Uro. Uro is a lot of the ban debt. But it feels like they have
all
to address
hail,
that before like the formats will feel good, and it makes them all feel more similar to me, knowing that they all feel like fake, like a temporary iteration of the format right now, because it doesn't feel sustainable to leave them as is.
Buy sealed Magic product.
I actually just checked in on this. Uro is an Elder Giant and not a bandit, so that's a slight correction there.
Exile 5 cards from my graveyard, cast Uro, draw a card, put a land into play.
Alright, thank you, Robot Ben. Alright, so all that discussion aside, the main things we'll talk about today is the Standard rotation that is happening. We've divided the cards up into cards that we'll grieve for, cards that we will dispassionately note are no longer legal, and cards that we will dance on the grave of. And there are a couple of cards here I think that there was a little bit of discussion about, which we will, of course, have when we get to them. But for the most part, I think we're largely aligned on which cards belong in which categories. Before we get there, however, we have the incredible honor of thanking various supporters at different levels of our Patreon. But before we do that, there's actually a Patreon request here for Benjamin. Benjamin, as you know, this week is episode 257, and 257 is a prime, and specifically a Fermat prime. Do you know what a Fermat prime is? And how many confirmed Fermat primes are there?
I think a Fermat prime is a prime of the form one more than a power of two. I do not know how many confirmed primes there are. I am now going to go look up what a Fermat prime is to confirm that I was correct. All right, not quite power of two. It's a 2^2 n plus one.
Okay. Ooh, somebody's got a very old phone ringtone as well.
I would appreciate you not mock my ringtone.
I would appreciate you not have your ringtone on my podcast, but here we are.
Whoa, it's my podcast too.
All right. Anyways, so supporters of that podcast include the illustrious friends of the podcast, Kiki Jiki, Kyle, Jetch MT, Baptiste, Baptiste Jr., Bobby, and Luke. Thank you for the tremendous support. And slightly less tremendous, but still very notable support from the good friends of the podcast include Adam, Zach, Britton, Kyle, Eric, Sam, Duncan, Wilson, Tobias, Paul,
Jarvis, Crew, you,
Busha Therapy, Greg, Hot Soup, Ari, Rob, Matthew, Brent, Moose has brought the shenanigans detector,
Winchester,
Asher, Dan, Dunn, Alex, and Will. Thank you all for the support. Did we come to a conclusion about whether I was supposed to beep when I omitted a name? I forget.
Oh,
but
that's confusing.
I don't know, but you just haven't been beeping like ever, basically.
All right.
There was a time when like I said Jarvis's real name, real middle name, and you didn't beep that time. And I was like, wow, Tristan is so on top of his game. But then it just turned out that you just weren't beeping after that either. So then I was back to like, oh, it was an accident.
All right, I'm turning Moose's bot back into a regular bot and not a shenanigans detector. I think the bits has lived through its term, and I'm too incompetent to continue executing the role of beeping all the time. So we'll leave that there.
I think Moose's bot, may I suggest changing yourself to an incompetence detector so that when we introduce ourselves on the podcast, Tristan can beep when he says his own name?
Well, it'll just be a constant string of uninterrupted beeping tone followed by like Sam talking a little bit about historic or whatever, and then just back into uninterrupted beeping tone. All right, let's move on to our card of the week segment. Benjamin, what is your card of the week?
My card of the week is Black Bloom Rogue. Black Bloom Rogue is a 2/3 human rogue on the front side. It has menace, and if an opponent's graveyard has, I want to say, 8 or more cards.
Eight is the magic number.
Okay, 8 or more cards, it gets +3/+0, so it becomes a 5/3. And then it is a modal double face card, so the back of it is a come into play tapped land that produces black mana. Black Bloom Bog is the name of the land. And I want to talk about this card because, you know, Winota, as we know, is one of the more powerful cards that's still legal in Standard. And Winota is the kind of card that you want to put humans and non-humans in your deck, achieve like a balance so that you can hit humans off your Winota triggers and you can include non-humans to trigger them.
And this card is a human and a non-human, right?
No, it's a human and a land.
Well, is the land a human?
No, but it's also not a non-human.
What?
It's not a non-human.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
It's a swamp.
I am aware. No, well, no, it's not a swamp, to be clear.
It's a land. I think if you were counting all the things that weren't humans, you would include Black
Look,
Bloom Bog.
Can you put it into play with Winota?
You didn't say it was a non-human creature.
Yeah.
Can you put Black Bloom Bog into play with Winota?
No, but that's not.
Then it's not a non-human.
Winota puts non-human creatures into play.
Whatever. Anyway, the point being that since this card doubles as a land, like the front side is just very mediocre, right? Just not a very good card. But because the backside is a land, you can include a bunch of these in your deck and still have a fairly good use for them, especially if you build your curve kind of blocky, like maybe with a lot of two drops. And this card can help you get a little more consistency out of your Winota triggers. I have no idea if that's good enough to get over the hump of the front side being very bad. But
the front side does work particularly well at enabling Winota as well, right? Like, it's evasive.
It's a human itself. Tristan. The non-humans are the
thing. Oh, the non-humans find the humans. Right. Dude. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, if your opponent happens to have a lot of cards in their graveyard, it is really big. One thing that bothers me is, like, why is there a mechanic based around, like, milling your opponent and having your opponent have a bunch of cards in their graveyard when Escape was just, like, in the last set? Not the last set, but, like, two sets ago.
A great
why is this happening? Like, who wants to mill their opponent? You're just going to mill them into Uro, and then they're going to cast it, and then they're not going to have eight cards in their graveyard anymore.
Certainly does seem like a little bit of a tension, for sure, but maybe the theme wasn't really supposed to make it into Standard so much as Limited.
Yeah, that's possible, I suppose.
All right.
Do you find modal double-faced card to be a very boring phrase to say?
I mean, it's a very robotic thing to say.
Yeah, I wish it had a cooler name.
Yeah, I mean, we could just call them flip cards, but that doesn't...
I don't know. That's not specific.
Land creatures, swamp things. We could call it Swamp Thing.
That would be cool. Okay. Let's do that.
All right, Sam, you're up next.
My card of the week is a card that I've talked about before, but I found another thing that I hate about it. It's Kargan Intimidator.
Wow, what a cool card.
Red and one for a 3/1 human warrior that says cowards can't block warriors, because that was funny.
Dude, it's got the phrase. Yeah, this is a great card.
And then it has choose one that hasn't been chosen this turn. Kargan Intimidator gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Target creature becomes a coward until end of turn, or target warrior gains trample until end of turn. And the thing that I hate about this card is that the coward ability causes Winota to trigger. If you turn one of your own creatures into a coward, it stops being a human. And I think that's really stupid.
Okay, I do kind of agree that that's stupid, but I also agree that you're stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, I guess, that someone from Wizards was funny in, like, 2006 or whenever Lorwyn, or whenever Future Sight came out. But it doesn't work. And yeah, I don't like that. The story is bad to me. Like, oh, my Winota became a coward, so then it was obviously able to trigger itself. I don't know.
Yes, I agree that this particular interaction is silly and dumb.
Sam,
but it is also worth noting, because I think this card is probably very good in Winota decks.
I'm afraid that this is invalid. You've already complained about this card before, and because you've done something before, you're never allowed to do it again, I'm afraid. So.
Oh, Tristan has a good point.
Ouch.
It was funny in, you know, 6 days ago, Sam. Actually, yeah. It wasn't really even funny then, but, you know, we'll cut you some slack.
All right, my card of the week is Allied Assault. Allied Assault is 2 and a white for an instant, uncommon. It says up to 2 target creatures each get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures in your party. And my thinking of this card thematically and name-wise is that this would actually be a better descriptor of our podcast than Allied Strategies. If you look at the podcast or the art for this thing, there's two allies just attacking some third party that's off the frame. And the flavor text is, a common foe is the death of old hatreds. And to me, it very much is thematic of the kind of cyclical structure of our show, where at any given time, two people are assaulting the third in a sort of temporary alliance against a common foe. So I don't know. I just wanted to point that out, maybe float the name change by you guys. If you thought, you know, 257 episodes is short enough that we can still rename.
I mean, I think it would have been a good joke if you just started off the episode by saying, hello and welcome to episode 257 of Allied Assault.
Okay, and that would have been a good bit, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been good, but
that doesn't solve the problem, though, of getting me out of the needing to pick a card of the week for the week bind.
Well, you could then explain the joke. We know that one of your favorite things to do is explaining jokes, so, like, you could then explain the joke in the card of the week section.
Yeah, the reason I like to explain jokes is because it makes it a lot funnier when you spend a lot of time talking about something really dry, like it's funny.
I mean, I agree with that.
All right, let's move on to our main topic and escape this section as quickly as we can. So we've got our lists here of cards that we are going to grieve for, cards that we kind of don't really care too much about, but we'll make a note of no longer being legal, and cards that we are delighted to see go. Let's start off by talking about the cards that we will be sad to see go. Up first is Legion Warboss. Benjamin, would you like to deliver the eulogy here?
Yeah, I feel like Legion Warboss did a lot of good work over their tenure in Standard. You know, Legion Warboss was doing their best to keep down Teferi, keep down some of the meaner elements, and kind of at a pretty fair rate, you know. It was no Goblin Rabble Master. Like, it didn't threaten to take over the game completely. It was just a solid way to generate some card advantage and some pieces of cardboard, and like to really put the screws to your opponent if they're doing something unfair, which during its time in Standard, there were a lot of people doing a lot of things that were unfair. So I like this card a lot. I think I'm going to be pretty sad to see it go. It was really well costed and really like at a good power level to provide pressure without, like, it's just the right amount of snowballing, it felt like to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought this was a really fun card, and it was also really fun when you, if you ever like somehow got to grow your token an extra plus one. I don't know. I really liked Mentor, and I wish there had been a little had been a few more pushed Mentor designs that actually saw some play. And I thought Legion Warboss was a really awesome card that was maybe stomped out a little before its time.
Yeah. Stomped out, as it were. I agree on Mentor being, it's kind of a design that has an inherent safety valve in it, right? Mentor, where it stops being effective once creatures get, like, as creatures get bigger, you're needing to invest more before Mentor pays you more, and so it's kind of hard for it to like spiral out of control, right? It's got a natural ceiling on how much it can do. So I agree that it's the sort of mechanic that lends itself. I would have liked to see more cards pushed with Mentor as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is a snowballing mechanic, but it's not like the other cards that ended up getting pushed were not snowbally, so I wish that the one that was actually about creature combat instead of drawing cards were you know, more often the things that got pushed.
Would you say Nissa was about creature combat?
No, not really.
So much combat happens after someone plays Nissa.
Sometimes.
We'll get to that one a bit later, I suspect.
All right, let's move on to Knight of the Ebon Legion.
I love Knight of the Ebon Legion. I think this card, like, it really encouraged you to play a low-to-the-ground aggressive black deck. It has had a relevant creature type, you know, in the vampire thing that was cool that some people were into. You know, that was more of a thing when Ixalan was legal, but I liked that. I thought that was a plant that worked out really well to power up that old tribe for a little bit. I think this is like, you were happy to draw it on, you were really happy to have it on turn one, and you were also quite happy typically to draw it on turn seven. I think this is the kind of card they need to do more of if they want aggressive decks to be good. In particular, I think white could use some more cards like this, because they, right now, all the white creatures are really bad to draw late in the game. They haven't really figured out how to crack that particular code yet. It had some pretty clearly defined weaknesses. You know, it wasn't particularly good against Stomp. It wasn't particularly good against Shock. A lot of cheap removal spells could kill it. And I really enjoyed playing with this card. I'm going to miss it.
Yeah, I didn't play with this card a huge amount, but I definitely get what Sam's saying. Having aggressive creatures with mana sinks on them is really nice. And I love like mini quests. So having the knight like incentivize you to sequence, like often there's like a good way to sequence when you draw your spells, when you draw Knight of the Ebon Legion, but like sometimes there's a tension where that sequencing isn't what you would want to do if your opponent has a certain card in their hand, so it like it mixes up the game a little bit. And I really like that about cards like this. I think it makes for some pretty dynamic games. in addition to the fact that it's just, like Sam said, it's a card you're happy to draw early, happy to draw late. I think this card did a lot of work making aggressive decks playable in a time where they really were sort of the least playable that they've been in a while, I think.
Yeah, very strong synergy as well with another card we'll talk about. I guess we could just talk about this one now as well, Rotting Regisaur, going away too. This one's not in the cards you'll grieve for, but instead in the cards we'll dispassionately note are no longer legal. But I do think that the Rotting Regisaur and Knight of the Ebon Legion shell defined that archetype for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, Rotting Regisaur was mostly played once there were like combos with it, like either Embercleave or Demonic Embrace, or there was some dinosaur deck that played it because it had a relevant creature type. I think maybe for Galta or something. I don't really know. But I thought Rotting Regisaur was a really... It's nice to see cards that aren't all upside sometimes. You know, like, Rotting Regisaur is a card with an interesting drawback, but clearly like a high reward. And seeing it show up as like a meta call for some decks, like when we played it in the sideboard of our Jund Food deck, which normally would never be interested in a card like that, or seeing it as the linchpin of certain archetypes, I thought was pretty cool. So I'm going to miss Rotting Regisaur even more than I'm going to dispassionately note that it's not legal.
Yeah, I kind of think I think I maybe should have moved that one up to the miss. I think I agree. That card was fun. It had a lot of, you know, some strengths, some weaknesses, a lot of range in gameplay. It was pretty exciting when, you know, you get to Hellbent because you had it, and then you top deck the perfect card to like force it through for that one final attack. That was always a really exciting moment. I thought it played pretty well and was a lot of fun to play with and against.
Yeah, I agree. Especially they've been working on that kind of design, and it's usually landed in the unplayable column with stuff like, you know, Master of the Feast, and nice to see it get somewhere that I think was healthy, because it seems like they were a little bit worried about the danger of that sort of card as well. So a nice job on it.
Leave it to Tristan to just call back to some random Theros rare that no one played.
Well, I played it.
I tried to play with that card a lot.
Oh, really?
In block. It was bad.
I played it in standard. I beat Ben in a sanctioned match of Magic the Gathering with that.
Is this the Waste Knot deck?
The Waste Knot deck, yeah.
Because if they draw a card, then they'll have a card in their hand for you to make them discard.
Yes, it's the old 1/2.
Tristan, did you know that there's a Waste Knot deck in Historic?
Oh, that is awesome.
I make no claims to how good it is, but you should try playing it sometime. It plays Tiny Bones, which is a fake card.
What does that mean?
It's a jumpstart card. It's like Muxus. They printed it so that it would be powerful.
I see.
Not that it would exist in a coherent set of cards.
All right, up next, Assassin's Trophy.
Yeah, I think this card, like I said, I like cards that aren't just pure upside. I like there to be some tension about deciding when to play a card and when to put it in your deck, and I think Assassin's Trophy had a lot of both. It's a very flexible card because it can hit any permanent type, but you couldn't just jam 4 in your deck because the downside is very real. Like, it only costs 2 mana, but sort of relying on it as a 2-drop wasn't that good because you didn't really want to cast it to just kill your opponent's 2-drop creature. It's not a card you wanted to use to buy tempo. It's, or at least not in the early game. It's a card you wanted for like a surgical strike against like a problematic permanent that you wouldn't normally be able to deal with, and then capitalize on top of that tempo, like, which made it very strange and fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this played out better than I expected it to when I first saw it spoiled. It showed up as like a 1 or 2 of occasionally in the green-black mid-range decks before Ixalan rotated is kind of what I remember, and then not really very much after that at all.
Yeah, I think it was a little more common than that, like 2 or 3. I think once Nissa started showing up, like the opportunity cost of giving, and I think Hydroid Crisis is probably the big one. Like the opportunity cost of giving your opponent an extra land was just too high, and like there were too many decks that were just playing only 2-for-1 cards, so you just couldn't really get value out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the removal has been pretty bad lately. I think they've printed a lot of creatures that removal is not effective against, and this card definitely is worse than I think it would have been in a lot of other formats because of that. But I think it's also been a fun addition to the older formats like Modern and Legacy. You know, a little can hit anything kind of hate, but you have to pay for it. You know, it has a real cost. It's like good against Tron, kind of. I've enjoyed having it around in Modern and Legacy.
All right, up next we have Midnight Reaper.
Yeah, I think some people are going to complain about Midnight Reaper because it was like a linchpin of the sacrifice strategies, and people got really sick of playing against sacrifice strategies for quite some time. But I think Midnight Reaper was not the culprit there. I think this like black mid-range card that helped you hit your land drops, helped you steadily advance your game plan, but at a cost, is the kind of cool card that you want. Like, it's a very high power level Grim Hierospex, and Grim Hierospex also saw play. I just really like these kinds of cards because I like playing like not hyper efficient creatures, but rather creatures that have utility, and then kind of, you know, cashing them out for some advantage. I like grinding my way to card advantage rather than just brute forcing it. So this is the kind of card that I really enjoyed playing with, and I'm sad to see it go.
Yeah, I also think this was a fun one. It had, it wasn't an insurmountable kind of card advantage. You did have to work for it, like you said, and also the damage that it dealt to you was not zero. I definitely remember having some games with this card where it was like, oh, I might actually die to my own Midnight Reaper. This is a real problem.
Yeah. I think Cat Oven was a bit of a culprit and might have made Midnight Reaper a little stronger than was really healthy. But
yeah.
Yeah, cards
I
get
think
some
that's
kind
not
of
Midnight Reaper's fault.
You get some, you know, guilt by association, right? When you're in a shell with cards like Cat and Oven, and, you know, profiting off of their bad design. But I agree, the Midnight Reaper itself was not the problem. Up next we have Status Statue. Sam, I believe you are the eulogizer of this one.
Yeah, I had a ton of fun playing with this card. I played it in a Mayhem Devil decks, and I thought it was really fun to have, you know, a removal spell, like a relatively bad rate removal spell or a combat trick. I just really like playing with combat tricks in Constructed. I think it's really fun when those show up. And this one was good enough that it could show up sometimes. I also had a fun moment at the first Pro Tour where this card was legal, where I was really close to getting to Status Statue my Chain Whirler because of Direfleet Daredevil, and I was really excited to do that. Although I didn't end up drawing the Chain Whirler, I just had the Daredevil. But that was really cool.
Can I just be sad that Direfleet Daredevil is not in standard right now?
If you want, I suppose.
I am sad that Direfleet Daredevil isn't in standard and isn't good in any other format.
It's probably good in cube, or at least decent.
Okay, I've next.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know. I really like when combat tricks see play, and this one showed up a little bit. I think it could have been a little bit.
Did Status Statue actually see play, though?
I played it.
Okay. Status Statue falls pretty firmly in the dispassionately note that it's rotating camp for me. I have no opinions on this card.
All right. Up next is Priest of the Forgotten Gods. This one joins Midnight Reaper in the, you know, range of cards that profited from a Cat Oven life, and maybe got some haste from it.
A lot of black creatures that don't immediately get value when you play them.
Mm-hmm. Priest of the Forgotten Gods, very much a card that, if removed quickly, can be done in a very unprofitable way for the priest controller. But if the priest survives for a turn, then it starts to go to town.
Well, it depends, right? Some decks are very weak to priests and some are not.
I thought this card was really fun because it just had such a variety of ways that it could play out. Like, there were some games where you had so much material to use with it that it you used it every turn and it was great. Some games where you really had to, like, think hard about what the second creature you were sacrificing was. And then some games where it got shocked immediately upon entering the battlefield and you felt like a fool for playing with it. And I thought it was a really fun kind of card to have around. Not too difficult to, like, plan around. You know, if you were thinking you would play against this card often, it was not very difficult to make it bad. But when it was powerful, it was also extremely powerful. So you could do that too.
Yeah, imagine expecting your opponents to play a lot of Uros and then be like, okay, what can I do that makes Uro bad? And then the answer you fall to is exile Uro after they play it twice.
yeah,
the priest wasn't that. Priest was a good card, a fun card.
All right, and now we're going to move on to discussion of a certain special green planeswalker. You all know the one that I'm talking to, of course, Vivian Arcbow Ranger.
Talking about
Benjamin.
I really enjoy Vivian. I thought this card was super sweet. It slowly built up a board presence for you. The, like, tutoring from your sideboard thing I thought was pretty fun. And, you know, you often didn't feel like you had to build around that aspect of the card very much to get decent value out of it. Like, you just had to put a Shifting Ceratops or a Questing Beast if you weren't planning on playing them in your main deck or whatever in your sideboard to feel like you were really doing it. But it was also really fun when it came up that you, like, wanted a creature that you had sideboarded out because it was situational and got to wish for it. And I thought it was a good planeswalker design for fighting other planeswalkers too, in terms of, like, giving you a lot of onboard power and letting you actually kill them in combat, because planeswalkers have way too much loyalty these days.
Yeah, I haven't survived very often facing down a Vivian, so I can't really say that I've ever seen my opponents use it to tutor for a creature. I do not care for this card. I am somewhat happy to see it rotate. I thought that it added a little too... I don't like how easy it was to give everything evasion in your green deck. I felt like it was just a little too good, but
yeah, I could see that. I think it probably would have been more fun if it didn't give the trample, because the minus ability was already a form of evasion in terms of, like, if you wanted to kill their planeswalker.
Yeah.
So I think I agree with you there, but I still think this card was net fun for the format.
I can believe that. I just didn't much care for it.
Okay, we will now advance to the category generally of cards that we are medium on the disappearance of. Of course, there, you know, maybe disagreements, but we already discussed Rotting Regisaur, which we kind of agree now should have maybe been in the more positive we will miss this card tier. Let's move on to Mayhem Devil. Benjamin, what is your take on Mayhem Devil as a player who has put a lot of these into play over your time?
Oh yeah, I've played with this card a lot. I would put this in the category of we'll dance on the grave of. Mayhem Devil and I had good times. We had a lot of good times. I sacrificed every permanent I controlled to Bantu and every non-land permanent I controlled to Bolas the Citadel in combination with Mayhem Devil to win a fair number of games. But Mayhem Devil has got to go. It's just way too oppressive. It, in combination with Cat Oven, which are also villains, but I think it wouldn't have been nearly as bad if not for Mayhem Devil. Mayhem Devil meant that you just couldn't really play a creature deck. If you tried to play a creature deck and you got paired against Mayhem Devil, you would just lose. You could try to remove Mayhem Devil, but the decks were pretty good at, like, bringing it back or, like, finding another one or whatever. And the amount of control the card gives you over the battlefield is just absurd. And I am happy to see it go.
So I think in other times I would have agreed with you, but Mayhem Devil's got to be squarely the good guy to
me. Yeah.
Almost the entirety of legality.
it is bizarre that Mayhem Devil got to be the good guy. It's, you know, dumbfounding.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I feel weird because I agree with everything you said, and yet when I was playing with or against Mayhem Devil, I was almost guaranteed to be having more fun than Fires, Oko, Uro, Reclamation,
Teferi, you know,
all of the other cards that have been around since Mayhem Devil sort of got onto the scene. So I guess maybe I don't feel dispassionate about Mayhem Devil. I feel conflicted is maybe a better,
perhaps.
Yeah. Cause I agree with, like, it was too complicated for novice players. Like I think the one Grand Prix that I played it at, I felt like really, you know, my opponents did not have a good handle on what was happening when I had a Mayhem Devil, like how bad all of their plays became. So that was not the best.
The fact that Mayhem Devil triggers off of opponent sacrificing is just ridiculous. And like the Mayhem Devil locks that could happen were so stupid, where you just be like, well, I can't really play the game anymore because my opponent has a Mayhem Devil in play. So I'd love to activate my Priest of Forgotten Gods, but I guess I just can't.
Yeah. But like I said, it was the good guy almost every format where it was played. So it's hard for me to feel like too negatively about it.
Yeah, it was the lesser evil, right?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, the next card is certainly not a lesser evil thematically. Nicol Bolas, Dragon God, also going to be going away.
This card really amused me. People kept putting it in their decks. I feel like I played against this card at a relatively high rate for how unbelievably bad it was. And people just always, it was so appealing to them. They just kept trying with it. And I really appreciate that about it. You know, I really appreciate those people for trying to stick it out. And I think this card is kind of cool. Like has the ability of all other planeswalkers is just a cool line of text, even though it's, I don't remember a time that it actually came up in any game that I've played.
My opponents have activated the abilities of other planeswalkers, but it's hard to say that it really made the difference.
Yeah.
I think I agree. So first of all, I agree with you. This card was not good. I feel like it would normally be good. Like 2 years ago, this card would be very, very good.
It compares pretty poorly to Teferi, Hero of Dominaria.
Yeah. Sure. But, like, that card was format-defining. I just said this card would be pretty good. I don't know. Like, I feel like people played it because they expected it to be good because there's so many colored mana symbols in its cost. And, like, it's a relatively cheap planeswalker. And, like, it looks impressive. Like, the plus one is just a straight-up two-for-one. But somehow that's just was never, ever good enough.
Yeah, I would...
I think it's Hydroid Crisis's fault.
To some extent, I think, yeah. I would describe this card as amusing. Like, whenever I felt like it was often when my opponent played a really odd combination of cards, typically like when they played their second unique sweeper, like they played a Cry of the Carnarium and then a Ritual of Soot, I'd be like, oh, they're a Nicol Bolas Dragon God deck. I get it. I understand what they're doing here. And then they would lose, but it was at least amusing to me.
It's ironic that the description you're talking about playing against Nicol Bolas Dragon God is flavor-wise what Nicol Bolas must have felt like in most of the conflicts, you know, throughout history.
Yes, it definitely had that feel to it. I agree.
All right, let's move on to the list of cards that we will dance on the grave of. We were just talking about Hydroid Crisis, so let's start there because that is on this list. We were talking last week about the new potential replacement for it, you know, the X blue green mana cost, but this one in particular, I think, really overshot the mark of what a mana sink in blue green can do.
The problem with Hydroid Crisis is that it's just not interesting. it's just not a replayable experience. It's like, oh, my opponent got a bunch of mana and then played a Hydroid Crisis, and then they gained a bunch of life and have a gigantic creature in play. So now I have to kill the creature with a 1-for-1 removal spell and then lose to the bunch of cards they drew. And it just played out the same way every single time. Like,
right, well, because it was this massive mana sink that got you cards, life, and beef on the board. And even a Sphinx's Revelation only got you cards and life, right? You still didn't actually advance the game state, although that also had this problem. But, like, the fact that Ramstack just had this a ramp payoff that got them all three of those resources, even at an inefficient rate that they could just dump all their mana into, yeah, I think that was not wise.
Yeah, it pays you off in such a boring way.
Yeah, that's my problem with it. It's just not interesting.
Right, because it gives you everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives you everything and, you know, very likely leaves you with another one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a Sphinx's Revelation thing too.
I'm going to be very happy to see this card go. I think you were just talking about the other blue-green X card. I don't think they have a lot of similarities, except that they both cost blue-green X. Mm-hmm. So I don't really understand that comparison. But that card is actually cool.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's like a pretty powerful effect, but like you have to play with a bunch of cards that have kicker. And like, or you could just sort of mulligan it into a 2-mana 2-2 or a 3-mana 3-3. Like maybe that'll be good on the board. I don't know. That card is actually cool to think about. Hydroid Crisis is stupid and boring, and I'm glad it's gone.
Okay, up next we have the other green planeswalker, Nissa. Vivian.
I wouldn't call Nissa boring, but I am going to be so happy it's gone because I am so sick of playing against it.
Yeah, to me, this one was really emblematic of planeswalkers having too damn much loyalty, because it felt like if your opponent ever untapped with it, they were going to win the game on the spot, mostly because of Hydroid Crisis. It's like, oh, they're going to play a 12-12 Hydroid Crisis and I'm going to be completely buried. But also, it didn't really matter how far ahead you were on board before they played this, because it had 6 loyalty and made a creature when it came into play. So it was really, really hard to attack down in a way that I found very frustrating and not very fun.
Yeah, agree 100%. I feel like the card had like 2 more loyalty than it should have had, which is a very large number of loyalty.
Yeah, it was even more frustrating when they played it and immediately, you know, like they played it on 10 lands, because we're playing Magic nowadays, people get to 10 lands on the regular, and then just immediately use the Mana Flare to cast something else busted. And that was also pretty frustrating. The one saving grace I will give to this card is that at least it closed out the game pretty quickly in most cases when it was went unassailed.
Yeah, I feel like every experiment they've done with expensive planeswalkers not actually costing that much functional mana has just been a disaster. Like Teferi 5 and Nissa 5 both like functionally cost 3, and it's just so it's so frustrating to get a 5, like a card with abilities corresponding to a 5 mana worth of cards for only 3 mana. Like when they would go Nissa plus and then cast a 2 mana instant to interact with you, it just felt so backbreaking. Like how could you ever come back from that? You had to reach the point where you just had to discard Nissa from their hand. You couldn't reasonably expect to be far enough ahead on board to contest Nissa.
Yeah, I remember a game, this was in Historic, so it could still happen, where I think I had 4 creatures in play, but they were kind of small. They were like, it was like 2/2/2s and 2/1/1s, and they played Anissa, and it was just like, oh, I was crushing on the board, and I can't even kill this thing this turn. And then they're going to untap and play something that wins the game immediately. I don't think I can win anymore. And it didn't, it felt like a very unearned victory, because like my opponent hadn't done anything up until that point, you know?
Yeah.
They had just played like a growth spiral or whatever.
Yeah, agree. Nissa is a stupid card. I'm going to be, this is, I think, the one I'm happiest to see rotate. I'm just so over this one.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Up next is Narset. Narset. A card that will rotate, but it already has a fine home in other formats. So not a card that we're seeing the end of by any stretch.
Yeah, so the reason I'm happy this one is gone is just because I have just consistently draw a card into it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I've done it recently. Paolo PVDDR, one of the best players in the entire world, if not the best, was complaining about it literally the other day. He was just like, this card has been legal for 2 years. I was just playing Magic, and I activated a card draw spell into it. And I'm the best player. He's like, and I'm one of the best players in the world, and it's been legal for forever, and I still just did it. It's so unfun to get that gotcha, and it's so hard to remember. I imagine what it must be like for, like, newer players, or even, like, less experienced players than Paolo, which is basically everyone.
It's just Magic players these days, you know, with damage on the stack and onboard tricks being taken away, we've just been coddled, and so nobody knows how to deal with, you know, looking at the board before thinking about what they're going to do, and that's it's really just a kids these days type problem.
It's just so punishing, and I actually just hate this mechanic in general. I hate it on all cards it's been printed on, because when a card is problematic for your game plan, you want to be able to try to find ways to remove it. And Narset actively stops you from finding ways to remove it.
Sam, what do you think about Narset?
I completely agree with what Ben is saying about... I'm not sure about the, like, stopping card draw thing necessarily being bad if it's somehow more memorable. Like, I never really have felt this about the 3-1 that stops people from drawing extra cards. That one never really bugged me. Just this last weekend, I tried to use a Crypt Breaker while there was an Arcid in play. Like, it's still easy to do. I was thinking about something else that was difficult, and, like, you know, I think I was scrying, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is great. I'll scry into this card and then draw it and then do it. And then I just, they had this Narset that was not really particularly good against my strategy. Like, it's good against Crypt Breaker exactly in the deck I was playing and basically nothing else. And it still felt like I got mega hosed because I forgot about it for just a second. And that was very frustrating. So I will be glad to see Narset go, for sure.
Yeah, it feels like it's just such a punishing thing that if it happens even once when a Narset's out, you're so far behind with, like, no recourse. That anytime you don't draw a card, like, that's just, it's such a disaster, right?
Especially if you spent something to do it and, you know, didn't know it was going to happen that way.
Yeah, I feel like if they want to revisit this design in future, they could maybe, like, exile the cards under Narset, and then when she dies, you get them back. That kind of...
I mean, that's just a lot of tinker, like, complication text to add.
Yeah, but
just not do the effect.
Right, but I guess I agree with Sam that, like, attacking card draw I don't think is inherently wrong. I think that right now the punishment case is too punishing, so I'd be looking to tinker that downwards. Maybe just, like, draw half as many cards as they would have or something. No, just spitballing here. Next up is Aethergust. Did we ever settle on a pronunciation for this thing?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know that we ever even asked the question.
Well, I guess it's a moot point now.
Good riddance.
It makes you think, yeah.
Go ahead, Ben.
Cards that interact with the stack and the board should not cost 2 mana. That is my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I'm now trying to come up with the least offensive 2-mana card that interacts with both of those zones to try and make Ben feel stupid. Go ahead, Sam.
Look at a face-down card on either the stack or in play. Draw. Gain one life.
I wouldn't that really call that interacting with the stack of the board.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. This one saw... just so much main deck play, and it felt so brutal when you were trying to play a rogue. It's kind of the Abraid problem for me. Like, you were trying to play with some card that wasn't the bad guy cards but happened to be red or green, and it was like, oh, everyone just has 4 main deck Aethergust to interact with my, like, the Great Henge or, you know, whatever, like, weirder thing I was trying to do. And I don't know, to me that was just very frustrating. And I'll be glad. It didn't feel that clever either. It didn't feel like, oh, this person figured out something about the metagame. Like they really got something smart going on.
It was just
more
too
like,
wide of an answer. Yeah.
Yeah. It was more like, oh, yeah, of course they're playing that because it's just good. It's just good. Cause, I mean, part of it has to do with Uro being busted and there always being too strong of green and or red cards, like Uro fires, Reclamation, whatever. But yeah, Benjamin. It just never felt like they were that clever.
All right, I've found the most inoffensive card that fits your criteria. Dawn Charm. 1W, prevent all combat damage that we dealt this turn, regenerate target creature, or counter target spell that targets you.
I mean, that's fine. Obviously, the problem with Aether Gust is that it's very generic and powerful and has a lot of applications, as opposed to Dawn Charm, which is very narrow.
Dawn Charm is 2 mana.
Modes.
It's 2 mana, and it interacts with the board or the stack. I don't know what to tell you. That's what you said.
Yep, Ben is a liar. Confirmed.
Yep.
I'm not a liar. I just said I would choose to not design cards this way.
Dawn Charm, too offensive to Benjamin to be designed ever. You hate to hear it.
I mean, I feel like that's the fundamental problem with Aether Gust. Like, no one's complaining about, like, Flash Freeze.
No one's complaining about Dawn Charm either. Until now, when Benjamin is starting this crusade against it. Unbelievable.
The problem with Aether Gust is that it was just so widely applicable. It was good if when your opponent cast a spell that you needed to counter, and it was good when they just had a creature in play.
Yeah, like, I agree with that. It was too broad.
Certainly can agree with that. I was just attacking the broadest form of the argument you put forward. Let's move on to the next card. Runaway Steamkin. This card to me kind of, I don't know, at different times in the format's history, I feel like it fell a little bit in the Mayhem Devil category of like, I'd rather play against this than Uro, but
yeah,
that it was less true. There were a lot of times where I did not want to play against Runaway Steamkin, like actively as well.
I just didn't really like this card because I felt like it was too snowball-y. Like, Legion Warboss hit a good amount of snowball for me, where if your opponent wasn't playing removal, they could still like interact with it by blocking and stuff like that. Runaway Steamkin, if you don't kill it and you let your opponent have it for a few turns, it goes completely bonkers. I mean, part of that was Experimental Frenzy, but I think I don't like such snowbally cards to cost so little mana. And I feel like Edgewall Innkeeper is like another example of this, but like obviously on a very different axis. Edgewall Innkeeper gives you a lot of cards. Runaway Steamkin gives you a lot of mana. But Edgewall Innkeeper is one of those cards where if it lives for even a small amount of time, your opponent accrues like a huge advantage and the game feels hopeless. But Edgewall Innkeeper costs them so little to ask the question, right? They just pay 1 mana for their innkeeper. And all of a sudden the ball is in your court and you have to deal with it. And if you don't, you're going to lose very quickly. And Runaway Steamkin is the same kind of card. I would like to be able to play decks that dirtle a little more and aren't like forced to react so quickly. So that's why I'm going to be glad that Steamkin is going to go. I recognize it's not nearly as offensive as many other cards on this list, but I'm happy to see it go.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the difference between Steamkin and Warboss is exactly what you just said. Like, the one mana of, like, extra turn for them to set up, or, you know, sometimes you could let Steamkin live for one turn, but not two, and, you know, if it happened on turn three, it was much more palatable. I kind of agree with you. I think Steamkin was probably a little bit too much, but not. I also agree with you that it's the least offensive, I think, of the cards on this list.
All right, Nightpack Ambusher up next here.
Yeah, this card is really not fun. It's really stressful because it's such a large creature and typically played in decks that really force you to try to get aggressive to beat them because their long game ends up being so powerful and so lockout-y. You know, they tend to play a ton of counter magic and you tend to get really punished if you wait around for too long. And this card really can sometimes punish you for making an attack or not having instant speed removal in a way that I thought was a little too constraining And I don't really think that the all flash experience is a good one to promote. I think it tends to not be a very fun way to play Magic.
Oh yeah, I hate that deck. That deck was the deck I hated playing against the most, even more than Uro, than Mayhem Devil, or whatever. Like, I'm just glad that the Night Pack Ambusher 3-2 counterspell card, Frilled Mystic, I'm glad that that, like, 1-2 combo tension will no longer exist. Just get out of here. Night Pack Ambusher, I hate that card.
Yeah, like, it's interesting to me how much I hear about people talking about, like, forking people with Cryptic Command and Mistbind Click as, like, a fun thing, when I think it mostly just sucks.
Yeah, agreed. It's like that Morph issue in Onslaught. Commando versus Kraghorn or whatever. You just have to guess. And sometimes you guess wrong and you lose horribly. And you're like, ugh, this is so stupid.
Well, the Mistbind Click Cryptic Command thing was often, it was like they could have both as well.
Yeah, but then at least it didn't matter what you did. Although you wouldn't always know that, so you might just feel horrible.
Yeah, you would always feel like you made the wrong choice. All right, final card on our list here is maybe the one that is the least offensive looking on its face, but a card that has seen a tremendous amount of play given
that.
Have
you seen this thing's face? It's hideous.
Wow, Sam. Glass Houses.
Oh, that is an allied assault right there.
Ouch.
All right. So the card is Arboreal Grazer.
Yeah, I put this card on the list mostly to tilt Caroline, but also because whenever I play against anyone with Arboreal Grazer in their deck, and it's a lot of people because Arboreal Grazer turned out to be a pretty good card, but like I always tilt off whenever they have it on turn one, and I always laugh whenever they have it on turn seven. So I'm just going to be glad to have that, like, tilting off experience taken away from me in this format, because I tend to like to play decks that attack, and a 0/3 for one mana tended to be pretty good at stopping me from doing so. So I'm happy it's gone.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah. Whenever are we like a Verizon ad or something? This
look, it's in retrospect, I should have put my phone on silent like after.
I played with Arboreal Grazer, I would draw it on turn three, and whenever my opponents played with it, they would draw it on turn one. So
yeah.
I hate it.
Definitely, that it's a card that really emphasized that experience for everybody, regardless of how true it was that anybody actually experienced that.
Yeah.
All right, that is our list of cards. Farewell to all of these. Look forward to the new format. I think. I'm not alone in just being really excited for things to change, because
I love rotations. I love all rotations.
Yeah, I think that keeping the game fresh, particularly, I mean, recently, the quality, I think, of Standard has been at a fair, like, the rolling 2-year average of Standard quality, I think, has been in the tank for a while, for the last couple of years, even. So it'll be nice to, you know, anytime there's rotation, there's a chance that it gets a lot better. And I think there's a lot of good signs. Although, we'll have to see. Ramp strategies, card draw type effects versus creature combat remains to be a potential pain point, I think, from the limited amount of Standard game that I think has started to be played today from the people who have early access to it, which, man, I hate that so much. I don't know if you guys hate that. I hate the period where popular streamers can play the game, but other people can't.
Oh, I mean, the set is out on Magic Online, and you can have all the cards easily, so.
Oh, nice. Okay. But for Arena, it's not, right?
I currently have every card available to me.
All right. Well, that owns, although I wish it was available on Arena,
really?
Too. Cause...
Even Muxus and Tiny Bones and Elvish.
I could play a deck with four Muxus in the next 10 minutes if I wanted to.
Okay. Wow. Must be nice.
Well, that's how the PAX event works, so.
Wow, must be nice.
Okay. You just have 4x, like, everyone who played in a PAX event has 4x copies of every card on Magic Online through, like,
Wait,
September 3rd.
I played in a PAX event.
It might be constructed only, I'm not sure about that.
What the hell?
I mean, you could log in and check, it's pretty easy to find out.
Still, though, I don't know, they're trying to make Arena the main platform, but, like, actively have less desire to play. Every time there's a new format, I am excited to play it, and then I see that other people are playing it already and I can't, and then I lose excitement about playing it. I don't know.
I think the early access events are really stupid. They should just let everyone play.
I think I'm on the low end for enjoying streams to begin with. Like, I usually just would rather play myself, and when it's something I can't play myself, it really tends to put me off of it.
Anyways, not to be too negative here, for the most part, a fond farewell to a lot of cards here, so that even in the midst of formats that were a little sketch in several ways, there were a lot of cards here that we had a nice, fond memories of, so be sad to see them go, and happy to see new things created. Let's close out with an end story this week, which I realize now I haven't picked one yet.
I've got one for you, Tristan.
Right. Fire it away.
All right, so I live with a married couple of Magic players, Sam and Jenny, and we go grocery shopping like every 2 weeks. And usually what happens is me and Sam go in to buy some groceries, which Jenny writes down for Sam on a list. So this is happening. We're going around. We're shopping. Sam is like, okay, I need to get big Cheez-Its. So he goes over. He finds the big Cheez-Its. He buys them. You know, we finish up the rest of our shopping. We go back home. When we go back home, we find out that Sam bought the wrong kind of big Cheez-Its. Because you see, what Sam had bought was a regular sized box of big Cheez-Its, which are apparently a thing. But what Jenny wanted was a large sized box of regular Cheez-Its.
Oh, that's so confusing.
I know, it is really confusing. And it's not like she was mad or anything, but it was just a very funny, like, why are there even larger sized Cheez-Its? Like, what is the marketing?
Oh, see, when I heard big Cheez-Its, that's what I thought.
Yeah, oh, me
that's
too.
That's what I thought that meant.
But I think you may have emphasized the words in a way, given that you knew the big Cheez-Its existed, Benjamin.
Yeah,
I'm not
that
sure.
Is possible. That is possible.
Were they good? Like, how do you think they compared to other Cheez-Its?
To be honest, I don't know. I didn't eat them. Like, my only requirement for a Cheez-It would be that I could eat it in one bite. If the big Cheez-It is more like a tortilla chip size, I think I would be pretty off it.
What if it was perforated? Like, Cheez-Its already kind of have a perforation to them. What if it was like four of them stitched together and you could break them like a Kit Kat?
I would be fine with that, yeah.
Okay. I hope that Mr. Cheez-It is listening and, you know, taking our notes into
Deals
account.
Your idea.
That is going to be all for us this week. We will be back next week with another episode of Allied Strategies. Bye, everybody. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 257.
But you're not even going to ask if we're ready?
Benjamin, are you ready?
Well, I thought I was, but now I feel like I need to reconsider.
All right, let me know when you finish that process.
Hold on, let me finish reading this comic. Actually, let me finish reading my Twitter feed. My entire Twitter feed. All right, fine, I'm ready.